This is the Tom Hartman Program.
So Brett Kavanaugh is now on the Supreme Court. Welcome back to the program. And the first thing the court did was say that a ruling by Brett Kavanaugh in the D.C. Circuit that said that it's just fine if companies want to continue and manufacture and put into the environment hydrofluorocarbons. What are hydrofluorocarbons, you say? They're chemicals that are used in refrigeration that are more potent greenhouse gases than even methane. They are literally thousands of times more potent than carbon dioxide. And so, you know, it would make a certain amount of sense if you're concerned about the world melting down to limit them in the environment. The IPCC just issued a report day before yesterday, which I haven't talked about a great deal on this program and probably should talk more about, that says basically that if we don't cut global emissions by 40% within the next 12 years, we're screwed. We're going to see civilization ending, my phrase not theirs, but if you read their report, that's essentially what they're arguing. You know, coastal cities are going to be flooded. Large chunks of agricultural land are going to become unusable, either from flooding or from drought. And we're seeing both all around the world, these extremes of weather, the polar ice caps melting, the Greenland melting, the sea rise. The sea level's already risen several centimeters, and you know, with the tides and everything else, it's to the point where, like, you know, Miami Beach is having to jack up buildings and install pumps, and London put, you know, giant valves around, you know, the mouth of, I believe it's the Thames River going into the Atlantic. I mean, there's people, you know, global warming is here. I mean, this report is talking about, you know, 2040 being a disaster time if we hit 1.5 degrees. Celsius. We're at about 9/10 of a degree Celsius right now. But a lot of these symptoms we're already seeing. California is on fire. I flew down there a couple of weeks ago, and just out of the window of the plane, all the way down, you're seeing fires and smoke and fires and smoke in Southern Oregon, Northern California, throughout California, actually. And these are the kind of things that alter civilization. We're watching a swing toward authoritarianism all around the world, in part because of all the displacement and disruption that's going around the world. For example, you have the desert moving south in northern Africa, and the central part of Africa, which is, or the equatorial part of Africa, which has always been desert, expanding. And this is producing an explosion of refugees. You know, farmers who can't grow anything on their farms anymore. Now, in the initial stages of this, back 10, 15 years ago, those refugees, particularly in Syria and in Libya, started fleeing into the cities and producing, and in Tunisia and in Egypt, fleeing into the cities and producing discontent in the cities because they weren't, I mean, these are people who formerly were, you know, what you might call middle class. They could make a living. They grew their own food. They had a good life. And, you know, lived in their tribal communities, you know, knew their neighbors and friends and the people they were related to and all that stuff. And now they're in the big city with no job, no prospects. And as they are adding to the cost of these countries, and we're talking fairly poor countries here in terms of social welfare programs, in terms of you know, the social safety net programs, in terms of providing people with housing and food and heat and cooling and all that kind of stuff. These countries were not able to do it. And the price of bread was exploding in Tunisia when that guy set himself on fire, which, you know, that was the story that the media said, oh, this is what sparked the Arab Spring. No, the Arab Spring was sparked by refugees going into the cities, you know, whether it's in Tunisia, whether it's in Syria, whether it's in Libya, whether it's in Egypt. Pick your country. All across the northern Africa, you're seeing this happening because of global warming. And then on top of that, when we took out Muammar Gaddafi, when we hunted him down and shot him with a drone strike and then let his own people kill him, when we did that, Libya, you know, devolved into chaos. It still is. And Libya is, surprise, surprise, right on the other side of the Mediterranean, in a fairly narrow part of the Mediterranean, from Greece and Italy. And, I mean, you know, you've got all these refugees now fleeing into Europe from Libya and then spreading across Northern Europe. You know, the Germans took some and the Swedes, and they're coming in at numbers that can't be appropriately assimilated. And so now you've got these right-wing backlashes all across Europe. And now Europe, by the way, is starting to experience this. In Germany, you had 50,000 people show up last week to protest an effort to cut old-growth forests and to protest coal-fired power plants, because it's coal-fired power plants that are causing this problem in large part. We have to reduce, according to this IPCC report, we have to reduce the consumption of coal from right now, 40% of the world's electricity is produced by coal, to 1% in 12 years. Now, that is doable, but it would take a mobilization of effort that is literally on the level of the mobilization of World War II, where we converted all our car factories into tanks and airplane factories, and we converted our nylons and socks and clothing factories into parachute factories. And we converted our clothing manufacturers, our jeans manufacturers, everybody started making uniforms. And our shoe manufacturers started making boots. I mean, literally the entire productive capacity of the United States, or a large piece of it, well over half of it, was immediately converted to war material. And we had rationing coupons. You could only get a certain amount of meat and milk and butter because those things had to be sent to the soldiers overseas. I mean, this is the level of mobilization that will be necessary to take this thing on. And if you ask the Supreme Court's five right-wing Republican Federalist Society judges, justices, who are all supported by the Federalist Society, supported by the Koch brothers, supported by fossil fuel money, is this something we should worry about? Should we worry about global warming? Maybe we should go along with the Obama plan to limit hydrofluorocarbons in the atmosphere. There are other chemicals, after all, that can be used as refrigerants that work just as well and don't destroy the atmosphere. And what did the Supreme Court say this morning? No. We don't give a good damn about whether or not the atmosphere is heating up and civilization is at risk. We just care about the profits of Koch Industries and ExxonMobil. That's what they said this morning, their very first action. And why I'm not seeing that as the lead story at the top of the news every hour on television, I don't know. Maybe it has something to do with fossil fuel billionaires owning media or their friends owning media. It's bizarre. Meanwhile, the coming Kavanaugh court doctrine, this is from Huffington Post, just consider what the Supreme Court has done recently. And, you know, the essence of this article is, expect more of this. In Shelby County versus Holder, the Supreme Court made voting more difficult for minority groups who traditionally support Democrats, specifically black people, by and large. It will hit Hispanics and Asians as well, but principally black African Americans. Citizens United allowed corporations of the wealthy to freely spend on political campaigns, creating a flow of money that helped Republicans secure control of state legislatures and governor's mansions across the country. Citizens United, Supreme Court decision, 5-4, right wing, all the way, handed America over to the billionaires who have chosen to exclusively fund the Republican Party. It also let them gerrymander districts to the party's benefit and write even more restrictive voter laws. Janus versus AFSCME Council 31 made it more difficult for public employee unions to collect dues, which will hurt Democrats in state elections. Husted versus A. Philip Randolph Institute allowed state election overseers to more easily purge voters from the rolls. And Abbott v. Perez upheld a number of Texas legislative and congressional districts that a lower court had ruled were illegal racial gerrymanders. Racially gerrymandering? Supreme Court says, no problem. As a result of these things, in 24 states this year, this month, well, next month, November 6th, within a month, voters will face more, in 24 states, will face more stringent voting procedures than they did in 2010. And voters in 9 states will face new voting restrictions enacted just since the last election, 2016. This is what these guys have brought us. This is the kind of destruction that the Supreme Court has already wrought on America that is largely unreported and unnoticed. And now with Kavanaugh on the court, it is going to turn into a complete freak show. So fasten your seatbelt, buckle in, get ready, make sure your airbags are turned on, because it's going to get wild. And frankly, I believe that the reaction to it is going to get wild as well.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Again, with Luke Vargas with Talk Media News in a few minutes. Plus, we'll be picking up your calls. And welcome back. Josephine in Detroit, watching us on Free Speech. Hey, Josephine, what's on your mind?
I just wanted to say this. If we can't impeach Kavanaugh, so why are we going out to vote? What's the point if we can't negate the... if we can't get anything done against the Republicans? I mean,
Josephine, we can get a lot done against the Republicans. We can't impeach Kavanaugh right now, and probably will never be able to. But, you know, you've got a couple of, Ruth Bader Ginsburg in particular, she's pushing 90 here. Breyer is in his 70s. Justice Thomas is 69, I think, right now. You've got a bunch of these people who are going to be replaced, and we need to be getting ready for 2020. We need to be getting Democrats in place. There's 1,000 reasons to vote, Josephine. And don't believe that stuff that the Republicans are putting on Facebook, pretending to be Democrats. They were doing this in 2016, saying, oh, the Republicans and Democrats are just the same. Hillary Clinton's a corporate, don't vote, don't bother. And it's a lie. Your vote does count. It counts a lot. You know, yes, the White House is not on the ballot this year, but the House is, the Senate is, your state races in Michigan are. You've got a bunch of people who are really good candidates. Your gubernatorial candidate in Detroit, I'm sorry, I'm forgetting his name, and his lieutenant governor, Garland, is a friend of mine. There are some really important races coming up. So, Josephine, I hope you will please vote in Detroit.
Yes, I will.
Thank you. God bless you. Thank you. Let's see. Zach in North Hollywood, California. Hey, Zach, thanks for watching Free Speech. What's up?
Good morning, Tom.
Hey, Zach.
If we could just get through to these millions of young voters that democracy is a team concept. Everybody's all enthralled with the game, football, baseball, the game. They're all enamored with the game. But the real games are played with rules. You break the rules, you get an instant penalty, 15 yards.
Right.
No long court drawn out things. We have got to tell everyone that votes blue that the Republicans are not team players. They're only for team few.
Mm.
Do we want to be a team of achievers winning our prize of fairness by playing fair? Or do we want to be a cult of cheaters that win by subverting the rules that protect all of us and moving the goalposts constantly in some tired reality beneficial to the puppeteers and the profiteers exploiting us consumers? You know, we've got to speak up, Tom. You know, just one last thing. Socialism. The root of the word social is socius. It comes from the Greek, companion.
Hmm.
There's nothing...
as in association.
Just companion, socius. Hmm. The Greek, companion. There's nothing inherently wrong or negative about the word social.
Yeah.
We are all companions in this big America.
There was somebody who posted a thing over on, I think it was on DU, who said that they were in a medical office, and it was a bunch of people sitting around who were all retired, and one of them started complaining about the damn liberals, and this person stood up and said, you know, you can thank those damn liberals for your Social Security and the Medicare that you're using to pay for this doctor visit. It'll shut them right down. Zach, amen. Well said. I appreciate the call. We'll be back with Luke Vargas right after this. Nation's Luke Vargas. You can follow him on Twitter at The Courier. Hey, Luke, what's up?
Hey, Tom, it's been an unexpectedly busy day here at the United Nations, or actually not even here. I mean, Nikki Haley was in Washington to tender her resignation to the president, but certainly the UN, whenever we're the above-the-fold story on Drudge Report, you realize it's a pretty big day at the United Nations.
Yeah. Hey, on Nikki Haley first, there is gossip, shall we say, that she knows that the Mueller investigation is going to drop right after the elections in mid-November. And that the caca is going to hit the fan really big in November and December, and she does not want to be part of the administration when that happens. She's staying until January, but she will not be viewed as part of the administration through this process. Do you give any credence to that?
It's hard for me to give that a validation or to cast it aside, but I will say that the way I see it, there's no downside for her leaving now, and right. only an upside. You get to, I think once you push to 2 years in an administration, your exit is viewed in different terms than if you leave, you know, 6 months in or even a year in. I think among the sort of the base, you're viewed as having put in your time and having left in a predictable fashion, as opposed to creating a scandal for the president to have to defend and explain.
Right, you're kind of a made man, only in this case a woman, yeah.
Right, and I was just sort of going through her accomplishments or the things which her critics would say are not accomplishments, and I think she has, you know, I heard you earlier on the show at the very beginning saying, look, you know, she has a lot of room to grow as a politician. I mean, she has a lot of, there are a lot of higher offices that I think could have her name on them. Yep. I completely agree. I mean, you look at this, she had turned a position, you know, the United Nations among Republican voters is seen as sort of a bastion of hatred of Israel. And she has completely inverted that. I mean, we'll talk about the costs of doing so later, but, you know, she has put a lot of countries in a position to have to decide between, do you want aid from the United States or will you back us on Israel? And not a lot of countries changed positions, but a number did. And I think the message was received. And, you know, leaving the UN Human Rights Council over that issue, zeroing out the budget for the UN Relief Agency for Palestine Refugees. Again, we'll talk about how that might set back the peace process. But I think she has inverted the expectations of what the UN is all about in the minds of conservative voters. That's going to be a calling card in the future election. Her emphasis on budget cuts at the United Nations, pushing for efficiency. The budget cuts haven't been all that severe. I mean, in certain agencies, they've been disastrous. But overall, the UN budget has not really gone down all that much. And yet she can say, look, this place was bloated. It was, you know, they're drinking cappuccinos with their pinky fingers up in the air and wasting money. And we came in there and told them they've got to run a tighter ship. And she's hammered Iran over and over and over again, you know, even inviting members of the Security Council down to D.C. to look at supposed missile parts, you know, that were sent from Iran to Yemen. So, and again, you know, did she lead to any breakthroughs on Syria or Russia or Ukraine or Iran or North Korea? No, but she, I think, can at least throw up her hands and say, look, I gave it a good shot.
I think she's going to do. So I don't mean to cut you off, but we only have a minute left. You wanted to get into the whole issue with Mr. Khashoggi, Jamal Khashoggi, the Saudi.
I'll perhaps have you pick up that story when we're off the phone. But I mean, this is a Saudi journalist and correspondent who seems to have been lured into the Saudi consulate in Turkey last week. He has not been heard from since. The Turks allege he may have been killed in extrajudicial execution within the consulate, which would be horrific. The U.S. is finally, quote unquote, speaking out here, but they're doing so in such a muted way that I'm afraid that we are getting into a situation where Saudi Arabia doesn't even see the need to provide evidence that this guy's alive. They can say, look, we don't know what happened. The U.S. can say, we tried to do something, and then the message is sent to critics of the Saudis to not even try to speak out. It's a pretty horrific scenario.
Is this the result of the buddy-buddy thing between Jared Kushner and the Crown Prince?
It doesn't help, right? You're not getting any message from the U.S. This is unacceptable behavior, and that's unfortunate.
Amazing. You can follow Luke on Twitter at The Courier. Luke Vargas. Thank you, Luke.
Thank you, Tom.
We'll be right back.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 202-808-9925.
We'll be back with your calls and more of the news of the day right after this. Plus, we're going to revisit this Ted Cruz ad. It's hysterical. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. And I just want to share this ad with you. This is so hysterical. Ted Cruz has been, his campaign slogan is, Ted Cruz, tough as Texas. Right. And so Richard Linklater, a movie maker who made a film called Bernie that stars Sonny Carl Davis, invited Sonny Carl Davis to reprise his Bernie character, no relation to Sanders, and because he's a Texan and he talks like a Texan, to talk back to Ted Cruz. Here it is.
Somebody left something on my door the other day. It said, Ted Cruz, toughest Texas. I mean, come on. If somebody called my wife a dog and said my daddy was in on the Kennedy assassination, I wouldn't be kissing their ass. You stick a finger in their chest and give them a few choice words. Or you drag their ass out by the woodshed and kick their ass, Ted. Come on, Ted.
Come on, Ted. That is a great ad. And Beto O'Rourke is like literally speaking to crowds of 50,000 people. Donald Trump is pulling 2,000 at a pop. This is, you know, Trump has never come even close to the size of the crowds that Bernie was pulling. And now Beto O'Rourke or Barack Obama, for that matter. I mean, I'm thinking Beto O'Rourke, if there's no stumbles and there's no landmines, might end up running for president in 2024. We'll see. But he certainly has a future in the Senate if Texas is paying attention. Fritz in Palm Desert, California. Hey, Fritz, what's on your mind today?
Well, Tom, I would like to give the Democrats a little advice on their messaging. I think they should steal a page from the Republicans and appeal to everybody's patriotism. You do that by telling everybody if injustice happens to one, it's basically happening to us all.
Right.
And then after that,
which is a value, by the way, that we as a country maybe didn't hold, you know, throughout our history, but certainly held up and praised as a value. So that's something that should resonate really well.
Yeah, and it's something we have espoused.
Right.
And I think we should call the GOP the group of poltroons, as they are craven cowards. They send others to the war that they start. And finally, and my favorite thing is when they call it the Democrat Party, we should call it the Relic Party. After all, if they're going to truncate Democratic to Democrat, we can truncate Republican to Relic, and it's actually pretty descriptive.
Yeah, yeah. I was fonder of Republican, but I like that. Good one, Fritz. Thanks a lot for the call. That's excellent. Lisa in Niles, Ohio. Hey, Lisa, what's up?
Hi, Tom.
Hey.
Well, I was when Judge Kavanaugh got confirmed. You mentioned how Dr. Blasey Ford and Ramirez are feeling, and I can't imagine because it's really shaken me to my core. But the media coverage since then, specifically CNN and MSNBC, Fox News is gone already, but they just parrot whatever is said, right or wrong, mm-hmm. and there's no information. And it has been even more apparent to me since the Kavanaugh confirmation. Mm-hmm. But the facts about the about climate change, I wonder if we're actually witnessing the fall of our civilization.
Well, we've certainly seen the fall as a consequence of climate change of the Egyptian, Libyan, Syrian civilizations, Tunisian. And probably others. And yes, it is. I mean, this is the thing. What the IPCC is suggesting, they don't use this phrase, but what they're suggesting is that within 12 years, we will be looking at a planet that is hostile to what we call civilization.
Right. I follow the facts. My degree is in nursing, but it's science. And I follow science quite. I read the AA reports, and I know this, and to me it's facts, but what is put out to everyone on the main news is propaganda and lies, And I think we've got such a fight politically just to get to some justice and truth in our country. There's not that much time to win both fights. And I'm usually pretty hopeful, but I, you know, the Romans went down the tubes. Egypt went down the tubes.
Yeah.
The Mayans, it's usually because of drought, water, some sort of climate change.
Or in the case of the Mayans and the Aztecs, it was the flu. It was diseases brought by the Spanish conquistadors. But yeah, and certainly there's no shortage of viruses out there that can get us too. But, you know, all that said, Lisa, I think that the human species is extraordinarily resilient and extraordinarily resourceful. And as this becomes more and more obvious, the people like, you know, the politicians who are funded by the fossil fuel industry and its billionaires are going to be seen increasingly for what they are. The thing that gives me hope, Lisa, is the late 90s. I forget which year was the big tobacco lawsuit, but the year before that, I think it was 98 or 99, the year before that, the most powerful lobby in Washington, D.C. was the tobacco lobby. The entire Republican Party and half the Democratic Party was claiming that tobacco didn't cause cancer, it wasn't settled science, you know, it's all in doubt, blah de blah de blah. That lawsuit happened, they laid out the lies of the tobacco industry, they won in court, the tobacco industry had to own it, and they had to pay millions of dollars in restitution. And 2 years later, the tobacco industry is almost a meaningless power in Washington, D.C. And I believe that the fossil fuel industry is going to go through something very much like that as a consequence of climate change. Obviously, the tobacco industry went through it as a result of 500,000 Americans a year dying from tobacco. And I feel like this is, we're going to see this all over again, and we're going to see it probably in the next year or two. And all it's going to take are a couple of really, really big natural disasters, you know, which we're getting. We're getting whether we want them or not. So
I agree that our human species is, we will survive through this, but I don't know if our civilization, our social, what am I trying to say? Our way of life is going to be unrecognizable.
No, I absolutely agree. And we may end up living in teepees and igloos, but, let's remind ourselves that when people lived in teepees and igloos, they lived in a sustainable fashion.
They did.
And they had, you know, happy lives and good society and very little warfare. You read some of these first contact reports like Peter Farb compiled in his book, The Rise of Civilization and the Native American. I'm not sure that would necessarily be a disaster for the human race. And certainly it wouldn't be for the rest of the species on the planet. But I'm not hoping for that. I'm not planning for that. But, you know, even the thing that scares me is if we hit a tipping point where the methane starts going in the Arctic. And when that happens, then you're talking about the actual death of the human race. And that's not something we can recover from. So we have to be doing something now. Lisa, thank you for the call. I have to move along, but thank you very much. It's great to hear from you. Nate in Westchester, Pennsylvania. Hey, Nate, what's up?
Oh, hey, Tom. Hey, thanks for taking my call.
Thanks, Nate. Take me off speakerphone, okay?
Yeah, hold on. Well, let me just put this in a message. Hold on. Hold on. Get you off speakerphone so I can hear, Tom. Hold on.
Nate, this is very discourteous to our listeners who are patiently, and the people patiently waiting to get on the phone.
Okay. Sorry. I've been
Try using earbuds the next time or something like that. Anyhow, what's up?
Okay, well, what's up? I think that when the Rust Belt back, I think Democrats should consider swinging back and supporting tariffs, because that's the only reason we lost the...
Democrats have always supported tariffs, Nate, with the exception of the corporate Democrats. I mean, Bill Clinton didn't support tariffs, but the majority of Democrats support tariffs and always have. The entire Congressional Progressive Caucus supports tariffs. Sherrod Brown and other, you know, there's Bernie. I mean, there's a whole bunch of Democrats who support tariffs and always have. Trump stole that. Along with he was going to protect Social Security and he was going to protect working people, he stole that stuff from the Democrats. And that's, I think, one of the reasons why he was able to get, you know, close enough that he could win.
Yeah, and I think you're right. I think the other thing that we could do is support price caps for healthcare, because healthcare is very overpriced in America. And price caps would bring the cost down, and I think that would be an issue that we could get a lot of votes with. A lot of businesses know that healthcare is overpriced. families are paying too much, and I don't think there's anything wrong with price caps. I think that's one of the advantages to Medicare and Medicaid is there's a maximum that a doctor or a hospital can charge for anything.
Right. That's one piece of it. I think the larger piece of it, and I'm just this is just from my own experience. Back in the 70s, I ran a company. Terry O'Connor and I ran two companies in Michigan, the Woodley Herber Company and Terra Graphics. And we had, at our peak, we had, I think, 17 or 18 employees, and we offered health insurance to all our employees. At that point in time, my recollection is it cost me around $30 or $35 per month per employee to provide full comprehensive health insurance to everybody. And the reason why was because in Michigan at that time, and I think most states had laws like this, in Michigan it was illegal for a health insurance company to operate on a for-profit basis. The Blue Cross Blue Shield that I provided to my employees was not for profit, number one. And number two, in Michigan at that time, it was illegal to run a hospital on a for-profit basis. It was also illegal to run schools on a for-profit basis, but let's keep this to healthcare. And as a consequence, in Lansing, we had Ingham Medical, which was owned by the county, Ingham County, which is what Lansing's in. You had St. Luke's, I think. Anyhow, there's one named after a saint. That was the Catholic hospital. And there was Sparrow Hospital, which was also a nonprofit, and I believe it was sponsored by the city of Lansing. And they have all gone for-profit now, and therefore we've seen our costs explode. The health insurance companies are for-profit, the hospitals are for-profit, and I think that saying, this stuff is important, let's go nonprofit, is also an important way to do this and a way to solve these problems. But great. Some great solutions, Nate. Thanks a lot for the call. Very, very well done. We'll be back. It's coming up on 47 minutes past the hour. It's actually 46:40 right now. We'll be back in just a few minutes with more of your calls. What do you think, by the way, about this angry mob meme that the Republicans are using, Fox is using, Right Wing Hate Radio is using, almost on a daily, on an hourly basis?
You're listening to Tom Hartman. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
I mean, Nixon tried this in 68 after the Democratic committee or the convention riots. You think it's going to work? And welcome back. Jonathan in New York City. Hey, Jonathan, thanks for watching Free Speech. What's up?
Hi, Tom. It's an honor to speak to you. I had a theory about Nikki Haley resigning. I believe that she will resign. And then after the election in November, Lindsey Graham will be nominated as Attorney General. And then the governor of South Carolina will appoint Nikki Haley as senator. And then Lindsey Graham's term is up in 2020, and she'll run in 2020 for Senate.
Whoa, that makes so much sense. That makes so much sense. Jonathan, I think you've nailed it.
Yep.
I think you've nailed it.
Trying to think like Trump.
Yeah, because, well, it was fairly obvious when Lindsey Graham did his hyperventilating defense of Kavanaugh that he was auditioning for Jeff Sessions' job. So if Trump fires Jeff Sessions, or if Jeff Sessions resigns, sometime after the elections and before the first of the year, then Trump moves Lindsey Graham into that position, because Graham is not up for re-election for another 2 years. Then he moves Nikki Haley in as the senator. She's got 2 years to cement her base, and then she runs for re-election, wins, and then 4 years down the road in 2024, she runs for president.
Yeah, against Beto O'Rourke.
May well be. That will be an interesting race. That'll be an interesting race. Jonathan, thank you for that. Boy,
sure,
I think
welcome.
You've nailed
Thanks.
It. May I have your permission to repeat that over and over on the radio?
Oh, sure.
Great. Thank you. I think you got it. Jonathan, thank you very much. I appreciate your call. Cheryl in Mount Pulaski, Illinois. Hey, Cheryl, thanks for watching Free Speech. What's up?
Well, you alluded to what I was going to say earlier. Usually there's a turnaround before they start to slash a woman. At first she was credible, and then she was mixed up, and then she was, and now they
Trump,
have flat
now Trump is calling her
victims
evil.
Victims of assault are mobs.
Right.
And so usually they've got a longer time for the narrative, but they went from 0 to 60 in less than 48 hours, whether it's because we have an election in a month or not. Yeah. I'm not sure whether that accelerated the language or not. But my wondering is Maine. And a friend and I were talking. We may go to Maine in 2020 with Susan Collins, because how can you say to an assault a victim, yes, you were assaulted, but you couldn't possibly know who assaulted you,
right,
when you have named the person who assaulted you? So I'm just wondering if women will forget in 30 days, since we are considered to be such weak minds, we can't hold our thoughts,
yeah,
or whether we really will get out and punish. I'm for the punishing myself personally. Yeah. But
I think Susan Collins is toast. And I think Susan Rice is going to be the next senator from Maine, and she's going to be a Democrat. And I'm wondering about Joe Manchin. I think that he's really hurt himself. Heidi Heitkamp has seen just an explosion of enthusiasm for her candidacy among the Democratic base in North Dakota, which absolutely was not expected. And, Joe Manchin just blew it big time. But I think Susan Collins, this is the end of her political career. On the other hand, I think she's in her 70s, isn't she?
I think she's in her late 70s.
Yeah, so.
And I agree with you, but here's the thing that I'm always afraid of.
Quickly.
As time goes on and they re-narrate this, all this narrative will change.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And people forget. You're absolutely right. Thank you, Cheryl. Welcome back. Had a caller a few minutes ago, Jonathan was his name, and he just suggested, and I think he has completely nailed it, what's going on with Nikki Haley today. I can't believe this was not so obvious to me. You'll recall a couple days ago when Lindsey Graham went off on his tirade on behalf of Brett Kavanaugh, that I came back on the air the next day and I said, this is his tryout for Jeff Sessions' job. Jeff Sessions is going to be gone by January. And in fact, probably before then. And Lindsey Graham wants to be the attorney general, and I'm betting that Donald Trump has already promised it to him. Well, Lindsey Graham is the senator from South Carolina, the state that Nikki Haley used to be the governor of. If I'm remembering my Carolinas right, I constantly get tripped up mixing them up, but I'm 99% sure I'm right. And so here's the scenario, and Jonathan just nailed it. Jeff Sessions retires and goes back to being the most racist Keebler elf in Alabama. Lindsey Graham replaces him as attorney general. The governor of South Carolina, who's a Republican, I believe, replaces Lindsey Graham with Nikki Haley. And Nikki Haley is now a United States senator for 2 years and gets to, create the basis for her re-election. Graham's seat is not up for re-election for 2 more years. Yes, Sean confirms for me the governor of South Carolina is a Republican. And so Nikki Haley is in the Senate now, and she's perfectly positioned in 2024 to run for president. I don't know how I missed that. It's so obvious. Robert in New York City. Hey, Robert, what's on your mind today?
Oh, Tom, I've been listening to you for years. I normally disagree with you, but before you said about healthcare companies being not-for-profit, I almost jumped out of my seat that we finally agreed on something.
Ha! Good.
I love it.
Good. Okay. Thank you, Robert. That's what you call to say?
That's it. I disagree with you. I want to reach into the radio and strangle you, but this time I agree with you. I was jumping for joy.
Okay. Well, next time you disagree with me, Robert, feel free to call. I'll be reasonable. And, love debating people. So, but Robert, thank you. That's very, very kind of you. And it's great to hear from you. Marcy in Elgin, Texas. Hey, Marcy, what's on your mind today?
Hi. I wanted to talk about mob. I'm so tired of hearing mob, because the First Amendment says Congress shall make no law abridging the freedom of speech or the right of the people to peaceably assemble and to petition the government for redress of grievances. That's a mob. That's us.
Yeah.
That's us. That protects our right to be a mob.
Well,
there was no mob activity going on. Nobody was armed. Nobody was shooting, you know.
Well, and let me ask the question. What was that in Charlottesville? Was that a mob?
People that were armed with
Yeah, the tiki torch crowd, you know, that looked like a mob to me. What about the tea parties? I mean, you know, if this is how they're defining a mob,
well,
people who are expressing political opinions.
They came out there with guns. Came out there with guns.
Oh, they killed somebody in Charlottesville.
Second Amendment,
they killed
right?
Heather
they
Heyer.
The First Amendment rights.
Yeah, yeah. No, I, you know, absolutely. And this whole thing of rebranding Democrats as a mob, this was a Richard Nixon strategy that he did after the 68 convention that helped him get elected in 68, rebranding those protesters as a mob. He did it again in 72 with the anti-Vietnam War protests. And now, you know, his acolyte, Roger Stone, in all probability has told Donald Trump, you want to win? Start calling these people a mob. It worked for us back then, it'll work again. I don't think it's going to work, but we'll see. Marcy, thank you. So very, very clearly, very well said. What a day, huh? We'll be back tomorrow with more of the news and more of my thoughts and yours in this kind of national town hall meeting we have here every day on the Tom Hartman program. And in the meantime, don't forget, democracy is not a spectator sport. Never was intended to be. It requires you. So get out there, get active, tag. You're it. We'll see you tomorrow.
You've been listening to Tom Hartman. For audio and video archives, visit TomHartman.com.